morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Arauco's third quarter 2018 results conference call. Today, we have with us Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Arauco. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded, and all participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are completed, there will be a Q&A session. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star zero to reach the operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that this presentation contains forward-looking statements that are based on the beliefs, assumptions, and expectations of the management of the company based on currently available information. They involve risks and uncertainties because they relate to future events or expectations, and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Arauco and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. For further discussion of these risks and uncertainties, investors should refer to quarterly and annual Arauco filings with the Chilean CMF and U.S. SEC. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements due to new information or future developments. Now, I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Arauco. Mr. Gianfranco, you may begin your conference.
Okay, thanks, and welcome everyone to this conference call for the results of the third quarter of 2018. As usual, the agenda is we're going to start with the financial review, and then we'll go to the business segments. We will talk about some material facts and news, and we'll end up with a round of Q&A. So if we can start on page four with a summary of the main figures for the quarter, we can see that the revenues were almost flat at $1.5 billion for the third quarter. Our adjusted EBITDA went down 4% to $525 million, compared with $546 million last quarter. Our net income was $221 million. That is a 7.4% down compared to the previous quarter. In terms of net debt and leverage, our leverage went down to historical 1.8. The last time we had that leverage was in 2010, and the reason for that was basically an increase in last 12-month EBITDA of 8% compared to last quarter, to a number of around $1.9 billion for the last 12 months. And that produced also a reduction in the net debt to $3.4 billion from $3.64 billion last quarter. We will go to the details of these numbers in the coming slides. So if we can start with page five, talking about the revenues, we can see that it's only a reduction of 0.4%. The description of that is pulp business revenues going down $14 million, basically because of a decrease in sales volume with flat prices during the quarter, compensated by an increase of $20 million in wood products revenues, also explained by increase in sales volume. In terms of cost of sales, we're relatively the same, only a $1.1 million increase, and the reason for that increase is basically on a unitary level, higher energy and fuel costs, and some increase in maintenance costs. And we're compensated by lower volume of sales, which explained to have the same total amount of cost of sales. You can see there that we have very low change in the unitary cost of pulp. Softwood bleached pulp went up 2% and hardwood pulp 1.2%. And unbleached softwood pulp had a 0% increase in unit cost of production. Now going to slide six, we have also the same thing more or less in administrative expenses, the same number, $141 million. Here we have an increase in wage and salaries, basically because of a provision for the annual bonus in the third quarter that is based on the good results of the company. So we are provisioning a better bonus for the employees for this year. And it's compensated by a decrease of $5.5 million in computer services expenses. We had higher expenses in the second quarter because of some software licenses payments. In terms of distribution costs, we have a $11.8 million increase. That is an 8.7% increase in distribution costs. And the main explanation is about $10 million increase in freight costs, basically because of the mix of export of wood to Middle East that has higher freight costs. Page 7, we have an increase of $6 million, that is 20% in other income. That is, the explanation for that is a higher gain from changes in fair value of biological assets compared to last quarter. And in other expenses, we have almost $1 million increase, so that is 5.6%. Here, the explanation is more expenses due to the project of Grayling and MAPA, and some decrease in payments of green tax payments. Page 8, we have a summary of the net income. We have explained most of the lines here. What we can see also is a higher financial income of 4.8, basically because of higher balance of cash during the quarter. And we have a reduction in the share of profit and losses associated with joint ventures accounted through the equity method. Here basically is because in the second quarter we have a higher than usual profit due to the accounting of the insurance claims of Zona Arauco. That is not done in this quarter. That's why we have a more normal profit from in that line. In the case of exchange rate differences, we have a loss of $6 million. That is lower compared to the $17 million loss that we have in second quarter. And here, the reason is that we had a higher balance in Chilean pesos in the second quarter previous to the dividend distribution that we made in May. And that caused more losses for exchange rate differences in that quarter. Page 9, we see the evolution of the adjusted EBITDA. Looking there, we can see that we had another strong quarter with $525 million of EBITDA, an EBITDA margin of 34%. We can see there that pulp contributed with almost $400 million of EBITDA. That is more or less 75% of the total EBITDA of the company. And that is around 50% of EBITDA margin for the pulp business. We are showing a decrease compared to last quarter, but an increase of 26% compared to 1 year ago in terms of EBITDA. Our year-to-date EBITDA for this year is about $1.5 billion as of the third quarter. And you can see the differences from one quarter to the other. We have a reduction in the EBITDA of pulp, basically because of lower volume of sales. We have also a small decrease in the EBITDA of wood, an increase in forestry, and a decrease because of corporate consolidation and adjustment. Now, if we go a little bit in detail in each of the business segments, starting with pulp, page 11, we can see there a graph of the list prices evolution basically in Europe, and we can see that the spread of NBSK and BHKP was about $180 on list prices. Last call we had a difference of $150. Just to give you a sense in terms of net prices, in China the difference was about $90. And you can see there also in the table on the left part of the slide, the growth in the demand for bleached chemical pulp year to date. We have an increase of as up to September of 2.7% in the market. That is about more or less 1 million tons. And the growth comes, as usual, from China, 7% growth, 700,000 tons more. And also from West Europe, 4.7% increase there. In terms of inventory levels, numbers of days of inventory are quite normal in BSKP. As of September, were 33 days, and BHKP, 41 days. Now, looking at the slide 12, we can see the the explanation for the 3% reduction in pulp adjusted EBITDA, we can see that prices on average were about 0.5% higher, but we had a reduction in sales volume of 1.4%. The decrease in sales of 1.7% is complemented by some decrease in sales of energy. That's why we have a higher decrease. Year over year, of course, the sales are up 22%, and the main explanation is a 30% increase in average price compared to a year ago. In terms of what happened to prices, we can see there in the graph that the prices were very similar to what we saw in the second quarter. And normally in the third quarter, we see some effect of the summer in the Northern Hemisphere, which didn't happen. Some of the explanations were that a strong demand and some unplanned disruptions in supply in some producers in North America that helped tighten the demand and supply relationship. In terms of what happened at the end of the quarter in Asia, we have some uncertainty in terms of the trade war between the U.S. and China. Some of the exporters in China were starting to get affected, and some of them use as raw material packaging and high-value paper in manuals of electronics, and that started to put some pressure in the demand for those products that at the end could produce some effect on the demand for pulp. On the other side, the European market showed a healthy demand in spite of the season of the year, as many producers were trying to assure some of their supply for the coming years as of the expectation of no new supply coming in the other quarters. We can see in Q3 that we had a temporary reduction in softwood from 890 to 860 in August, and that went up again to 880 in September. Now on page 13, looking a little bit about production, we had a very stable production, even though the third quarter we didn't have any maintenance. So the reason for having the same production is that we have some unplanned small stoppages in our mill, especially in Montes del Plata. We have some days that we lost the production, and that's why we didn't have more production that we should have in the third quarter. As you can see there, also in the table, we had only one stoppage in the second quarter in Arauco Line 1, and we didn't have any annual maintenance in the third quarter in our mill. Page 14. Now looking a little bit about the outlook, we can see that in Q4 we are feeling that paper demand is clearly down and affecting. Finally, pulp and demand and prices. We saw the first adjustment of prices for November in softwood. We announced and we finally closed a reduction of long fiber in China from $890 per ton to $830 per ton. Of course, the tendency is due to lower paper demand, not oversupply. So we still think that this adjustment could be short-term and not long-term, because the medium-term outlook continues to be positive because of no new supply coming in the following years. In terms of short fiber, we announced for November a reduction of $10. That is not completely closed yet. We still need to see how the negotiations continue of November. That's why we're not showing that number there. In terms of future stoppages in our mill, in the fourth quarter, we already had the normal stoppage of Arauco Line 2, 10 days, that is completed, and we have the 10-day stoppage in November of Montes del Plata, also completed. This month, we are going to start at the end of the month the annual stoppage of the Valdivia mill for 13 days. And the rest of the stoppages are in March, Constitución, and February, and in March, Licancela and Argentina. Now we move to page 15 and talk a little bit about the wood product business. We can see that our EBITDA went down a little bit less than 2% to $103 million for the third quarter. And they're dividing the effects in sales, in panels, and some timber. In composite panels, we had a 4% reduction in price on average and a 6% increase in volume this quarter compared to the last quarter. Year over year, the situation is more or less the same, a bigger reduction in price compared to a year ago, but a higher increase in volume compared to a year ago. And sawn timber, we have a 2% reduction in price and a 4.5% increase in volume. And compared to a year ago, the situation is the reverse. We had a higher price and lower volume the third quarter of 2017. So if we look at the reasons for that, we are seeing that in case of composite panels, we have an increase in sales, MDF and particle board showing higher sales in Latin America, and MDF also having increase in sales in Europe. In terms of sawn timber, we have seen good sales, even with the tensions of the negotiations between U.S. And China. Demand was also stable in the European and Middle East market. In terms of plywood, demand remained stable in the United States and Canada. Remember that in we are with the Chinese have a 100% tariff on imported hardwood plywood in the United States. That's why we are experimenting a good pricing scenario in the U.S. But we had a slight decrease in prices due to higher supply coming from other Brazilian and Chilean producers trying to enter the market because of these attractive prices. Page 16, we're showing the production and sales volume, and you can see that panels is quite stable in terms of sales and production. In sawn timber, we see the increase in sales from 564,000 cubic meters to 607,000 cubic meters. And we're showing a small reduction of about 10,000 cubic meters in plywood this quarter compared to the last one. And the explanation for that is basically sales in Oceania, Australia, basically, and some reduction in sales in Chile, but quite a small reduction in terms of absolute levels. Page 17, now the outlook for this market. If we start with the graph there, we can see that the U.S. Housing Start Index, which has an impact in our sawn timber sales to the U.S., moldings, and also particleboard and MDP in some sense in the U.S., have been quite stable, now normalizing at 1.2 million houses a year. This is the data from September. We're not seeing a big increase here. And interest rates are starting to increase in the U.S. So we expect that to be quite stable in the coming quarters. In terms of sales of particle board and MDP, especially we expect that sales, of course, will increase next year as we have the ramp-up of the Grayling project that should start at the end of this year, probably the beginning of 2019. And during the ramp-up process could add probably 400,000 cubic meters of particle board in year 19. In terms of remanufactured products, demand has been healthy due to lower supply from China and Brazil, and we believe that demand would remain good and prices could increase. Of course, always looking at the evolution of the negotiation between the U.S. and China and the impact that would have in increasing tariffs, especially if they start to increase as of January 1st. Plywood, we think that we could have some decrease in demand, especially because of weather effects that could affect construction in North America. As you can see there, North America represents 45% of sales of wood products. Now, moving to slide 18, and Central and South America, which represents 37% of sales. Basically, our sales in Brazil have been growing. 5 or 6%. Situation economically is looking better after the elections and expectations for the recovery in the economy and more liberal reforms are moving a little bit the market. And since we're starting from a very low base, we're seeing some increase in sales. And coming from a quarter that was affected by some restrictions in logistics because of some a blockage of roads and some volatility because of the elections. Argentina is different. The slowdown has been hurting the economy and, of course, affecting our product sales. And the lower Argentine peso is impacting our U.S. dollar margins. But at the same side, we are being able to export, and that depreciated exchange rate gives us more competitivity to export lumber, particle board, and MDF, somehow neutralizing the negative effects. As usual, Chile demand is expected to remain stable. We have good margins and a good mix of products. Now, going to markets are more marginal for us, like Asia and Oceania, 12%. We expect some stabilization in prices, and also Japan is more strong and will continue this trend expecting in the future. And finally, Europe and the Middle East, 6% of the demand, prices and demand flat. And we expect that we could have some more demand because some of the local producers are producing at full capacity. And Middle East, we have a positive outlook, and we have volume increasing, pricing remaining stable. Now going to the free cash flow in page 19, we can see that we had a good free cash flow, $200 million more or less, and it was basically due to a good adjusted EBITDA and a quarter that we didn't have a dividends payment. As you can see in quarter two, we had a 115 more or less payment of dividends, which affected the free cash flow of quarter two. So that and a small reduction in CapEx helped us deliver a $200 million reduction in net debt. You can see there on the graph that we were able to go from $3.64 billion to $3.43 billion in our net debt as of the end of the third quarter. In terms of working capital variation, we have a 75% negative effect on cash, and that is because of an increase in accounts receivable of about $50 million, some increase in inventories of $35 million, compensated by a reduction in accounts payable, an increase in accounts payable, sorry, of $10 million, a net effect of $75 million consumption of cash. Page 20. This is the evolution of our net debt and leverage. We already talked about it. We were about 3.6 times on the end of 2016. Now we are at 1.8 times, the lowest since 2010. We have a balance of cash of $735 million. So that netting the $4.2 billion of debt ends up at $3.4 billion of net debt. The increase in cash, of course, is because of the increase in our EBITDA and some decrease in other uses of cash. Last 12-month EBITDA, as I already told at the beginning, was up 8.1% due to higher pulp prices, now running at a rate of about $1.9 billion every 12 months. Quarter-on-quarter leverage from 2.1 to 1.8. We could have some additional reduction on the fourth quarter, depending on the cash flow, but we are going to have provisional dividends again this fourth quarter, so that will hurt a little bit the free cash flow for the quarter. Page 21, our debt amortization schedule. Basically, for the rest of 2018, nothing big. In the fourth quarter, we have to pay $50 million of the normal payment of debt of Monte del Plata, which is around $200 million a year, some small amounts of leasings, and some amortization of local bonds, $10 million, and interest, of course, that we pay in the fourth quarter, about $38 million. The news here is that we refinanced the $200 million that was due at the end of September this year to a five-year new loan that is now due in 2023, as shown there, the refinancing. The rest is basically very, very healthy in terms of amortization. Now, let's talk a little bit about the material facts and news, starting from with the Grayling project in page 24. We are now at 93% completion. We are showing some photographs there of the mill. The cost of the project, we have increased a little bit to 450. Now it's our best estimation of cost. That's basically because of some delays in the construction and other costs that have appeared there. The capacity is still 800,000 cubic meters a year. We think that the startup could occur at the end of the year or probably the beginning of next year, depending on the availability of personnel from the vendors that are from Europe that have to test the machines if we get up to the end of the year with the holidays, could be difficult to get them to test the machine. So we could start probably during January. As I told you, this mill should produce more or less half of its capacity during 2018, as we could end up the year or the second half with about 800% capacity as a startup it starts to end. Page 25, the Solvent Park project is about 50% advanced at the end of October. CapEx, $185 million. That number hasn't changed. So all we have mentioned before, the mill will be able to switch from paper grade to dissolving pulp at the end of 2019, and will keep the option to produce paper grade if it's, the differential of prices is less than what makes economic sense. The project is going on schedule and with no problem at this moment. Page 26, we did some financial activity. Apart from the refinancing of the $200 million that we did at the end of September, we also issued two local bonds in the Chilean market about a month ago for a total of $8.5 million, which is about $320 million. We did two series, one of a 10-year bullet bond with a yield of 2.38% yearly and a tenor of 25 years that we did with a yield of 2.88% a year. We already hedged the longer portion, the 25-year bond, that is $5 million. We already hedged $2 at the 20-year tenor. The proceeds for this are basically financing of the MAPA project in advance. It was the biggest local issuance of the year in Chile. And after that issuance, we have a cash position at this moment of about $1.1 billion because of these financing activities. The amortization schedule, as you can see there, is very good, and we have a lot of debt now maturing at the 25-year or 30-year from now. Page 27, we signed the main equipment contracts for the MAPA project with Valmet and Andritz. The total amount for both contracts is about €600 million. Valmet and Andritz are the main suppliers of the equipment and the state-of-the-art technology, and the separation of the areas are that Valmet would supply the recovery boiler, the power boilers, dryer, and bale handler, and Andritz would supply wood preparation equipment, digester, fiber line, evaporator, recasterizing, and limekiln. It's about 50-50, let's say, the in terms of size of the equipment and more or less the amount of money for each of them. What we have left to do is we are doing the bidding process for the engineering, the construction, and assembling of the main equipment, and we're going to start the movement of earth probably at the end of this year. We have already assigned to our company the earth movement, and we are on schedule. All the team is assembled, and we are working very hard to do this on time and on budget. You can see the photograph there of the team of Valmet signing the agreement, and photograph of the water recovery system that is already in place in the Arauco mill. Just to remember, MAPA project is a third line of 1.56 million tons. It considers the shutdown of the old line in Arauco of 300,000 tons, and is a $2.35 billion investment and should be producing at the second quarter of 2021. On another side of the news, in page 28, we signed an agreement with MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, through the Industrial Liaison Program, ILP, to allow the company to complement its competitive strategies and enhance innovation. This is an alliance between companies and this university in order to have access to technologies that the MIT is developing. At this time, about 250 companies in the world are associated with MIT, and because of this, we will have access to activities, forums, research summaries, and we will take advantage of other MIT resources to address our current challenges and anticipate future needs of the company. Okay, this is what I had. So now I would like to open for Q&A if you have any questions. Please go ahead.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions from investors and analysts. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone at this time. If at any point your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. We do ask that when you pose your question, you pick up your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we pull for questions. Our first question comes from Leopoldo Silva with Lorraine Vile. Please go ahead. Mr. Leopoldo Silva, your line is now open. Perhaps your line is on mute. All right, moving on to the next question from George Stafos with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thank you for all of the details. I had a couple of questions regarding the North American panel markets. First of all, can you comment, perhaps provide some background on how you think the grayling capacity will be absorbed by the market, how much it represents of the overall composite panel markets? Any color there would be helpful. And then secondly, we have seen plywood imports into North America, into the United States, roughly growing at around 30% year to date, given industry data. Are you keeping up with that market trend? What do you see in terms of U.S. plywood markets at present in terms of their favorability? Thank you, and I'll turn it over.
Okay. Well, starting with grayling, I mean, grayling, with that, as you said, about 400,000 cubic meters next year. The market for particle board has been a little bit soft this year. For MDF, has been better. And so it's a little bit more difficult to start at this point of the market than we thought. The grayling project is more protected because of the location of the project. Where we are located is a strategic position where most of our competitors are very far away from that market, and we have a lot of customers there. So we think that putting the volume of grayling, which is in terms of total capacity of our panel mills, could be 10%, but in terms of course of the U.S. capacity is higher. It's going to be quite easy. The thing is, we will probably have to reduce some volume in other mills that we were delivering particle board, especially probably from North Carolina, and some volume that was coming from other parts than Canada. So we will do some adjustment in the volumes that we produce to favor the production, which is more competitive in grayling. So we don't expect any problem putting that volume, but of course we were expecting, and that's why we did the analysis when we evaluate the project, to reduce some of the volumes that are coming from other of our mills. And that is planned, and we think we're going to do it. The market is softer than we thought at the beginning, but we have everything planned. So, and in terms of plywood markets, first of all, the plywood that we sell in the U.S. is different from the plywood, the normal plywood. Our plywood is more appearance grade, so it's high quality. So we're going more in a niche in that market. So we haven't seen the growth that probably the construction and plywood has been going on. Our capacity, of course, is fixed. We are selling everything that we produce, and we are having growth a lot in volume in the U.S., but we have experienced increasing prices. The imports in the U.S. probably are down now because of the restrictions for the Chinese imports of hardwood plywood. What I've heard is that the Chinese are trying to get around that tariff by putting some some softwood boards on top of the hardwood I'm trying to export from Vietnam and other sources. So they're trying to get around the 100% tariff. But we are selling everything that we can in the U.S. We have a fixed volume that comes from our two mills in Chile. And our market is very small compared to the total market of plywood. I don't have the exact number there, but probably it's somehow like 15% of the total market of plywood is the niche we are going after, which is the high quality, appearance grade plywood.
Thank you. That's very helpful. I will turn it over to the next person.
Okay, thanks.
The next question comes from Leopoldo Silva with Lorraine Bio. Please go ahead. Leopoldo, we are still unable to hear you. Perhaps your line is on mute. As a reminder, if you do wish to pose a question, please press *1 on your touch tone phone. Please hold again while we poll for questions. Our next question is a follow-up from George Staphos with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my follow-up question. Again, on panels, can you comment at all in terms of how the level of competition has been changing in South America, in particular in Brazil and in other markets? We have seen, and certainly we've seen in your numbers today, there's been some continued downward pressure in pricing. Is that lessening? Is it staying the same? Any commentary in the market would be helpful there. And then if you could comment on the pulp markets, you mentioned that November for hardwood has not been set yet. I think you mentioned that you nominated a $10 per metric ton decline. If you can talk about what some of the fundamentals you're seeing right now that are framing that price change, and what considerations will ultimately allow you to set the price, when is the next, if you will, mile marker on that. Thank you, and good luck in the quarter.
Okay, thanks, George. Starting from competition panels in Latin America, basically we haven't seen any change. I mean, competition has been always hard. I mean, it's a competitive market, especially in Brazil, some oversupply, low demand compared to other years, but no really change, and things are getting better in terms of perspective of demand, some increase, but I don't think that competition is any more easy in Brazil and in Latin America. In Chile, I think we more or less stable. We have like 50% of the market in Chile. The same more or less in Argentina. We compete with Maciza, and of course in Argentina, as demand is softening, we are trying to not to reduce pricing, and that is always a competition, trying to keep volumes and trying to focus on more high value added melamine, which is the biggest margins, and that's where we want to compete instead of raw boards, which are very low margin products. So trying to keep prices, focusing on somehow on reducing volumes, not to fight the price in Argentina. In terms of pulp markets, yes, the main reason for the reduction of November is a softening of the demand for pulp that is based on a very soft demand on paper for our clients. They are facing high inventories of paper. They're starting to decrease production, and looking back, they say they look at not to buy a lot of pulp because they're going to start getting higher stock. So that is pushing back and pushing prices down in terms of accepting the same volume. As you mentioned, we announced a reduction in softwood pulp already in November. That is already closed, and we announced a reduction of $10 in hardwood. That is under negotiations, and through the rest of the month, there will be negotiation in terms of our clients accepting or not the volume at that price. I personally believe that due to the volatility in the markets of the tariffs in the U.S. for Chinese products, that is impacting demand for products that are related to those exports and somehow hurting the growth of the economy in China. So that will put some pressure on paper, and prices of pulp were already high. So the margins the producers are somehow stressed. So I will say that we'll probably have a couple of months of volatility, and somehow after the New Year, the Chinese New Year in February, we could have good news as demand picks up, and depending on how the negotiation in the G20 and between Trump and the Chinese government go on. So as I said, medium-term perspectives are good, no new capacity coming, and that on the face of the normal growth in pulp demand is of 3-4%, could bring back the demand, the market more onto the sellers rather than the buyer side.
Gianfranco, if I could ask one more, and I apologize, is the weakness in demand relative to hardwood being centered more in tissue? Is it being more in graphic paper? Is it more in any packaging boards? Thank you again.
No, the softening, of course, is more related to products that are more directly affected by the export. So packaging probably is the one that is more affected. That has more a softwood component than hardwood.
Sure.
Tissue, of course, is something that people in China consume every day, so it won't be affected by some tariffs imposed by the U.S., and that is more related to hardwood. The thing is that the differential of prices were quite high, were about $100-something, so that's why softwood came down more than hardwood. So I would say that short-term effect could be more on softwood than hardwood because of where the end product is located.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Leopold Silva with Lorraine Weil. Please go ahead.
Okay, guys. Sorry for those technical issues. I'm kind of struggling with tech. So, Gianfranco, hello. My first question comes regarding leverage, and which once again is in low levels. Maybe this MAPA investment would contribute to 1 or 1.2, 1.5 at most. So my question is, have you been speaking to credit agencies about this improvement? What do you feel about their outlook, maybe an upgrade in the credit rating in the short term? And in that same line, thinking on 2019, would you be thinking on giving out an extra dividend or waiting until maybe third quarter to see how the EBITDA evolves in order to take a decision like that? Or would you be more conservative, or would you be more aggressive in the dividend side? Thanks.
We talk a lot with rating agencies all the time. I mean, yeah, and it's and especially because of the MAPA project announcement, we did some talking with them. We are, they have issued their reports. I mean, you can read them, and they say, of course, that they expect, and we also expect, that leverage through the construction shouldn't go up above 3 times, and that is our expectation because of the price projections that they have, and we share their view. So I don't think that we should have any problem with rating agencies. At the same time, I don't think, I mean, they expressed that an upgrade will have to wait for the results to come. So we don't expect an upgrade very soon. I mean, that will depend on if results are better in the years to come from the projection that they have. So I will say that we are in terms with them. They have expressed their opinion, which are very good in terms of the project, the timing of the project, in the shape that we have in terms of leverage to start this project, which is very good. So I would say that The opinion is good. You can read the reports if you want. And they always express that an upgrade is not very probable, but will depend on certain things like leverage staying below 2x for some extension of time. We are below two times now, but during the construction that will go up because of the capex that we will face, especially in 2020. And regarding dividends, we don't expect to do any special dividend. We have a policy of 40% of net income, and we have had that for many years, and we will expect to keep it. So the dividends will be done in the same way that we have done it in the past. Like in December, we do a provisional dividend that is about 20% of net income as of September. So that could be about $110 million, more or less, that we will distribute in December. And in May, we distribute the balance, which is 40% of net income the whole year. So we do the 40% of net income, and we subtract the provisory dividend. So we expect to keep it that way. We don't expect to distribute more dividends because we have a better result rather than the 40%, I mean, in terms of percentage.
All right, very clear here.
Thank you.
Franco, if I may, I would like to ask you about the stoppages, your plant stoppages, and in particular in Constitución. I see that it's longer than the other four. Is there any special? Because last year you had the upgrade of the boiler, and has to do with this, has to do with other things, and also what happened at Monte de Plata this third quarter. Thanks.
Yeah. First of all, there's a typo on page 14, the capacity of Constitución. It's only 355, not 5 million. I wish it would be 5 million tons, but it's only 350,000. No, not really anything special about the 20 days. Remember that when we did the upgrade, was more than 30 days of stoppage. I can get back to you on what the meaning of that 20 days, but as I remember, should be a normal stoppage, but I can get back to you on anything different. And regarding the data, Neil, we had some bad luck in terms of some issues in the impregnator, the equipment, basically just before the annual stoppage. And we did a stoppage in November. Just coming into the stoppage, we lost probably 3-4 days because of a problem with the impregnator that happened. I mean, it's bad luck. We care a lot about maintenance, but this happened, and we didn't. We were as fast as we could to repair that, and we lost some days. And since it's a very big mill, that is a loss of production. But that is already worked out, and the mill is producing now without problems.
All right. Thanks very much.
This concludes the question and answer session. At this time, I would like to turn the floor back to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello for any closing remarks.
Okay, thanks to everyone for attending this call. Sorry about the date, just after Thanksgiving. We will have our conference call for the yearly numbers probably in March. So we will send you the invitation and the press release, and let's hope that we meet there and to analyze the results for the whole year. Thank you. And if you have any questions, of course, contact our investor relations team here in Chile. Thanks.
Thank you. This concludes today's presentation. You may now disconnect your lines and have a nice day.